Hello everyone, this is Bob Zeta, my amateur radio call sign N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We'll be reading together today the digest format version of World Radio Online for the month of August 2011. World Radio is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. The editor is Richard Fisher, KI6SN. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Our website, www.handyham.org. Let's begin today by looking at the World Radio Online News Front. Federal Communications Commission's top dog does the pop-in at the Dayton Hamvention. FCC Chairman Julius Trenikowski made a surprise visit to the 2011 Dayton Hamvention on Saturday morning, May the 21st. According to reports from Hamvention officials, Trenikowski was flying to Dallas when his plane was diverted to Dayton due to weather issues. When he found it was difficult to get a hotel room for the night because nearly 20,000 amateur radio operators were in town for the Hamvention, the FCC chairman decided to visit the show before resuming his trip the next morning. He reportedly spent about an hour and a half at Hara Arena, and show officials said he was impressed with what he saw. WWV to discontinue propagation forecast broadcasts. The Space Weather Prediction Center, SWPC, on September 6 will discontinue the broadcast of its propagation forecasts on WWV at 18 minutes past the hour and WWVH at 45 minutes past the hour. The Irish Radio Transmitter Society News reports the messages will still be available at http://1.usa.gov/KT8J04. The reason for discontinuing this service is entirely budget-driven, Patrick V. Gladsays of the SWPC said. As we begin to receive reductions to our funding levels, we are forced to examine our entire program and make cuts. The WWV service costs are quite high, and the information we provide on it is currently duplicated via the internet service. A very large majority of our customers use our internet feeds, so when comparing the two duplicate services, it was clear to us that the WWV service was that most logical service to cut. Newsline thanks Irish Radio Transmitter Society News for that report. Radio amateurs could answer call for MCOM help from Saturn. After a devastating EF5 tornado leveled a broad area of Joplin, Missouri in May, more than 50 amateur radio operators responded to a request to help the Salvation Army Team Emergency Radio Network, that's the acronym Saturn, to provide logistical support to the affected areas. Just 2 days later, all personnel needs had been met. The hams helped to relay information to the Salvation Army Joplin headquarters about inventory, requests for food and drink, and maintenance problems. Let's take a look now at the legislative front. Senate's companion bill to H.R. 607 protects amateur spectrum. In May, U.S. Senators Joe Lieberman, independent from Connecticut, and John McCain, Republican of Arizona, introduced in the Senate S-1040-1040, the Broadband for First Responders Act of 2011. Unlike a previous version of the U.S. House of Representatives, H.R. 607, it does not call for auctioning any spectrum that would have affected radio amateurs' 70-centimeter band. S-1040 has a similar overall objective to H.R. 607, which was introduced in the House of Representatives in February by U.S. Representative Peter King, Republican of New York. Both bills call for the allocation of a so-called D block of spectrum, 758 through 763 and 788 through 793 megahertz, to facilitate the development of a public safety broadband network. And I suppose, folks, as the weeks and months go by, we'll be hearing more about these two bills, both the Senate and the House of Reps bill regarding amateur radio spectrum. We'll conclude the World Radio Online Newsfront report with Commissioner calls it quits to take Comcast post. FCC Commissioner Meredith Atwell Baker stepped down from the commission on June 3, about a month before the end of her term, to take a job with Comcast as its Senior Vice President of Government Affairs for NBC / Universal. President Obama will have to name a Republican to replace her, as the law permits no more than three members of one political party on the five-member commission. Probably a good idea, folks, huh? That's from the CQ Newsroom. Hi, hi. The editor's log. The editor's Richard Fisher, KI6SN, Kilo India 6, Sierra November. It's titled Added Content. Peeling back the layers of WRO, well, Radio Online. One of the coolest things about the digital magazine is its many layers. Reading World Radio Online can be like peeling an onion without the tears. Look through this month's pages, and you'll find internet links to richer content in most features and columns, the website of that special event station you're chasing, the full text of some FCC legislation mentioned, a YouTube video. You get the idea. Did you know the same is true for WRO advertising? Most of the ads appearing in WRO are directly linked to the manufacturer or retailer of the item you're salivating over. Place a cursor on an advertisement, click, and if linked, you'll be transported through your web browser to the company's website. No matter if you're reading live online or have downloaded WRO to your desktop, if you have internet access, you can dig as deep as you want into that newly introduced transceiver, classic antenna, or whatever. Now, for you listeners, if you're not too familiar with the commands on the computer or the keyboard of the computer, the editor, Richard Fisher, gives a little bit more detail. It's not lengthy, so I will give it to you. To return to the magazine's page after looking inside an ad, when reading WRO live online, press the back arrow, usually in the toolbar in the upper left of your screen. When reading from a download on your desktop, simply minimize the page. In other words, click the minus sign in the upper right corner of your screen. In either case, you're back at the mag, M-A-G. Don't let your monthly onion go unpeeled. It's delicious inside, and we promise not to make you cry. Well, they certainly have some humor here, huh? That's interesting. Continuing the editor's log, from Dayton, with love. To everyone who navigated the huddled masses to stop by the CQ Communications booth at the Dayton Hemvention in May, thank you. It was fantastic to meet so many WRO readers and to put names and faces to the call signs of the radio amateurs who have taken part in our monthly WRO live online chats. You look nothing like we'd imagined. You give us some great story ideas and suggestions for making the magazine even more useful. We jotted them down, and we'll be following up. In this month's WRO, we have a treat for you, a photo essay of moments at Dayton, to give a taste of the people and places that created the scene. In other words, wild. In it, you'll find photos of some of the staff members who write and produce the many magazines, books, DVDs, and other printed and digital materials produced by CQ Communications, WRO included. It's a great team, and I'm very proud to be on it. If you've never been to the Hamvention, we highly recommend you go. It's a weekend of tremendous fun and camaraderie, spiced with the surprises only Harrah Arena can bring. I'd like to thank my good friend Jim Stafford, called W4QO and QRP Amateur Radio Club International, for inviting me to speak this year about trail-friendly radio. That's my column. It was a great honor, and the thoughtful questions and insights that came from the audience during the Q&A just blew me away. We appreciate what a great weekend everyone at Dayton made it for us this year, and we're already excited about Hamvention 2012. Hope to see you too. Now, for those of you folks who have internet capabilities and can get online to do involvements with this live talk chat thing, the next one is August the 7th, WRO Live Online Chat, August the 7th. If you haven't had an opportunity to take part in one of the monthly WRO Live Online Chat sessions, why not take the plunge? We'll be gathering at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 0 UTC, Sunday, August 7, at our usual Chatosphere rallying point, the WRO Online blog. Now, of course, you'd have to have the ability to navigate to this particular site, but I will give it to you. Many of you probably can. http://www.worldradioonline.blogspot.com. World Radio Online is as one word after the dot. Blogspot is one word. I'll give it again. www.worldradioonline.blogspot.com. Simply come to the site at chat time and click on the Cover It Live window. You'll see there. Bingo! You're in. If you'd like, go to the site now and sign up to receive an email reminder when chat time gets near. Our data shows that there are both chatters and lurkers. I guess those aren't the talkers, huh? You're more than welcome to participate as either. The sessions are casual and friendly, and all amateur radio-related topics are fair game. Replays of previous chats are on the blog site as well. Take a look if you'd like to see how the conversations have been flow. We hope to see you for this month's session. Remember, the next online chat is August the 7th, 2011. Richard Fisher, KI6SN. This month's issue of World Radio, August 2011, folks, begins with the Handy Hams. I always give them favorite position when it comes to the feature articles because some a member of Handy Hams, as you probably all can surmise by all these years of me reading about them and to the TIC network, where I've been for 22 years with you folks. So it's been a great trip. But with regard to the Handy Hams, they're a very important organization in the amateur radio community basically throughout the world because they help people to become amateur radio operators, people who are perhaps blind or otherwise print impaired, and perhaps not quite able to afford some of the more sophisticated training manuals, discs, and so forth. This one is titled, How to Help a Disabled Friend Pick the Right Radio, by Patrick Tice, called WA0TDA. Pat is the general manager of the Courage Handy Ham system. What is a good radio for a person with a disability? Here is how to help a friend decide. Assisting a person with a disability effectively depends on so many different factors, not the least of which is what kind of disability the operator might have and what kind of amateur radio operation he or she might enjoy. One of the most common questions is about which radio is best for a blind operator. Much less common are questions about how a person with very limited muscle control or mobility can control a radio. Generally speaking, there are two categories of disability-related questions that make up the bulk of the inquiries we get about accessible radio equipment. Much farther down on the list are questions about how to stay on the air when one is losing one's hearing. I have to confess, this is somewhat surprising to me because more and more of us in the baby boomer generation are experiencing hearing problems What did he say? Perhaps it is because there are other options already out there for operating digital modes, or by using simple solutions like good headphones and audio shaping filters to enhance the voice part of the audio spectrum. In any case, I have always been fond of using off-the-shelf solutions whenever possible. Let's discuss how to find out what a person with a disability really needs and learn about some of the basic features that manufacturers already include in some of their transceivers. Step 1. Find out the person's operating goals. Of course, amateur radio is one of those big tent activities that has so many different facets that you have to begin by narrowing down what type of operation a person might prefer. People with disabilities are no different than anyone else in that they will have definite preferences for single sideband operation, CW, which is Morse code, digital modes, QRP, and that's low power, amateur radio satellites, emergency communications, and many others. I don't know about you, but I don't have time to explore each and every facet of amateur radio, so I have to set some priorities. If I prefer operating 75 and 40-meter single-sideband traffic nets over working DX, which is distant out of United States contacts, or VHF, very high-frequency repeater operation, that is an important thing to know when considering how to choose radio equipment and configure my station. That is why the first thing I always ask a person with a disability who comes to me wanting to know which radio is best is, please, tell me a little bit about what kind of operating you like to do. If you don't answer that question, you might spend 20 minutes extolling the virtues of an excellent blind-friendly VHF/UHF-FM mobile radio, when in fact, the person you are talking to is more interested in weak signal VHF Morse code operation. As I talk to a person about the type of amateur radio operation they prefer, I can generally get a sense of what priorities they put on different types and modes of operation. This is often a good thing to ask if they have a budget in mind for setting up their station. It would be great to have the resources to set up a complete station from the get-go, but if the budget is tight, you will need to find that out in order to help your friend decide which equipment should get top priority and what will have to go on the wish list for later. By the way, I always have a computer at hand when I am talking on the phone, so I have already looked up the person's call sign and license class. If you don't have a computer at the time you talk, just go ahead and ask what license class he or she holds. This will have a bearing on what their amateur radio priorities might be. Be sure to ask what the antenna situation is like. You will have a better idea about what kind of recommendations to make later on in the conversation if you know if the person you are helping lives in a single-family home with a large yard, or in a condominium with restrictive covenants. Step 2, lay out some choices. Now that you have some idea about the operator's amateur radio goals, you can start making some suggestions. Something to keep in mind is that lots of radios have accessibility features that you might not have even recognized before. One of them is keypad frequency entry. While this is not ordinarily considered an accessibility feature for people with disabilities, it can make a real difference for a person who is blind because he or she can directly enter a frequency and thus be able to set the radio's frequency without being able to see the frequency display. A large, high-contrast frequency display makes it easier for just about anyone to read, but a person with low visibility may find this feature to be a vital part of the design. A front-firing speaker helps all of us hear the radio better without having to resort to headphones or an accessory speaker. Larger knobs and buttons designed for human beings make it easier for anyone to use the radio, And a person with a mobility impairment or muscle disorder may find this kind of radio to be the only one they can reasonably control. More radios from ICOM, ICOM, and YAESU, YAESU, are coming with speech frequency announcement capability already installed. You just press a button near the main tuning knob and the frequency display is read out in a clear voice. Of course, this feature is useful in mobile operation when a driver wants to maintain a view of the road ahead instead of looking at the radio, but blind operators also find it a huge convenience. Another feature that is often overlooked for accessibility is the built-in antenna tuner. An operator who is blind or a person with severe arthritis may find it inconvenient or downright impossible to tune a manual antenna tuner. But automatic tuners do the job easily and quickly. What I am getting at here is that there are some universal design features that can make operating a radio easier, whether the operator has a disability or not. Let's summarize some of the basic things to look for in a radio that might be considered universal good design. Point: thoughtfully laid out front panel with direct keypad entry. Point: front firing speaker. That means it's on the front of the set looking right at you. Point: large, easy to grasp controls and good sized buttons. Point: large, high contrast frequency display. Point: built-in voice frequency announcements. Point: automatic antenna tuner. Point: USB or other data port allowing a rig control via computer. Of course, not every radio will have every desirable feature. Some, such as the ICOM IC7200, have all of these features except one, an automatic antenna tuner. You can easily recommend the addition of an external automatic antenna tuner from companies like MFJ or LDG, among others. Other radios, such as the Kenwood TS480SAT, offer voice frequency and menu announcements, but only with the addition of an optional module. Some people can run their computers with special accessibility software and may be interested in controlling the radio that way. Step 3. Help your friend narrow the options. By now you know a fair amount about your friend's amateur radio goals. You have discussed any restrictions that might be placed on antenna installation, and you have thoughtfully considered budget limitations. You have, in short, collected a fair amount of data about the person you are assisting. Unless you are extraordinarily knowledgeable about many different models of amateur radio gear, you probably, like me, have to do a little bit of research. If that means telling your friend that you will get back to them the next day or in a couple of hours, or whatever time frame you deem necessary to do your research, that is perfectly okay. One thing you must be sure to do is to follow through and get back to your friend when you say you will with good information. Nothing is more frustrating than people who say they're going to do something and then never seem to get it done. Although I sometimes need to do research on these types of questions, I find that I usually know enough to at least make a preliminary recommendation during our initial conversation. Sometimes this is good enough, and the person I am trying to help will tell me so and take it from that point on their own. It is important to remember that people generally like to feel empowered by being able to make their own decisions. When I am asked to help a person decide what kind of radio will work for them, I consider myself more of a facilitator in their decision-making rather than an authority whose decisions must be followed. Okay, so you now have in your mind what systems engineers call a decision tree. You are able to follow the branches of the tree, helping to guide your friend by allowing him or her to make the right decisions at each branch. For example, If you are working with a blind person who wants to operate VHF, UHF, FM, you know early on in the decision tree that you are not going to follow the HF branch, high frequency branch. Instead, you will be asking about what kind of VHF/UHF operation your friend would like. If it is fixed or mobile operation, you are going to be talking about a radio like the Kenwood TMV71A with an optional VGS1 voice module. If it is portable operation with a convenient small radio, you are going to be talking about handheld transceivers like the Kenwood THF6A, or lastly, the Wuxun, that's Wouxun, a relatively new piece of equipment available in America from China. That item number is KG-UVD1P. Step 4. Manage expectations. But what if early on in the decision tree you encounter unrealistic expectations? Let's say you're talking to a guy and he tells you he has an extra class ticket and is very interested in making contacts on HF, high frequency. He is unable to do any antenna work, is on Social Security disability with a small budget, and lives on the 10th floor of a condominium building. This is the sort of situation that requires your gentle guidance toward managing expectations. Yes, sometimes it is possible to put a mobile antenna on a condominium balcony, but in this case, is that really the best solution? An alternative might be to operate HF, high frequency, via an internet remote base HF station like the ones provided by the Handyham system or the W70XX system. Another alternative might be to operate through an Echolink or IRLP repeater system. If your friend is open to trying digital modes like PSK31, it may be possible to make a reasonable number of contacts with low power and a very modest antenna system. While these options might not be exactly what your friend has in mind, the reality of the situation is that the full range of HF operations on a small budget from an antenna-restricted location is just not that practical. Helping your friend to understand this limitation and then to offer alternatives is the best bet for managing expectations and helping your friend to get the most out of amateur radio. Step 5. Follow up to make sure your friend got on the air. People with disabilities are as individual and different from each other as any of us. Some are real go-getters and will take the lead assertively planning and building their amateur radio stations to the best of their ability, even asking for volunteer help and directing the project. Others will be more passive and perhaps be shy about asking for a radio club member to help them unpack and connect a radio. This is where the follow-up call is important, because it is where you will find out whether or not your friend was able to act on and implement his or her plan to build a station and get on the air. Any radio club worth its salt has a team of volunteers who will be able to help club members complete station and antenna projects and get on the air. The follow-up call is a good time to suggest these radio club resources to your friend. Step 6. GOTA. Yes, GOTA stands for Get on the Air, just as it does on ARRL Field Day. What you want to do is make sure your friend is actually getting on the air and using his or her new station. Take an active role in promoting your club's repeater system and invite your friend to take some time to check into nets that you know he or she could reach on the air. Ensure your friend is active by pointing out on-the-air activities such as contests, special events, informal and formal nets, emergency communications, training, and more. In closing, helping a person with a disability make some decisions about station equipment and operation can be a very rewarding activity. Not only will you feel good and learn something yourself about how people with disabilities get on the air, but you will have also helped another operator enjoy amateur radio and made your local amateur radio community even stronger, perhaps even gaining a new member for your radio club. The nonprofit Courage Handyham System is a resource for people with disabilities who want to learn amateur radio. Contact us to find out more, join, or support our work at Courage Center Handyham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, MN 55422. Phone toll free 1-866-426-3442. Email, all lowercase, hamradio@couragecenter.org. Ham Radio is one word, HAMRADIO, at Courage Center, one word, CourageCenter.org. The Handyham website is www.handyham.org. Handyham, for our purposes, is always one word. This is how it's spelled, HANDIHAM, www.handyham.org. I want to thank Patrick Tice, WA0TDA, with the Handyhams for his article titled How to Help a Disabled Friend Pick the Right Radio. But as a personal closing thought to you, I want you to know that I thoroughly enjoy, myself, amateur radio in all of its aspects, all the years that I've been involved with it. You just have to, G-O-T-A, get on the air once you get involved. On the very first page of this With the Handyhams article, it's page 32 of World Radio Online for August 2011, is a photograph of Handyham volunteer Matt Arthur. His call is KA0PQW, Kilo Alpha Zero Papa Quebec Whiskey. Matt lives in Minnesota, and he knows blind operation and helps other operators make the right decisions about choosing their station equipment as well. I've had the privilege of meeting Matt Arthur, who is totally blind, has been for many, many years, if not since birth, and he's a remarkable example of people with disabilities, in this case blindness, who has accomplished marvelous, intense, very intricate things by mastering his abilities to focus on learning to be an amateur radio operator and then, in turn, helping others. We thank Matt and Pat Tice for this great piece of information with the Handyhams. You know, folks, with all this talk in the last few minutes about getting prepared to get into amateur radio, whether you're impaired or otherwise, you're always going to look forward to hamfests, which are like amateur radio flea markets, and special events, which are usually on weekends, sometimes extended periods. So with that in mind, let's take a look at August, the International Lighthouse Lightship Weekend. The Amateur Radio Lighthouse Society is sponsoring the International Lighthouse-Lightship Weekend, August the 6th and 7th. The operating guidelines and scoring details can be found at their website, http://illw.org. This annual CUSO party is held in conjunction with International Lighthouse Lightship Week, August 1 through 8, and National Lighthouse Day, August the 7th. It's really fun, folks. If you get established in the hobby, you're going to find yourself wanting to sort of seek special, unique kind of goals for yourself and your radio station at home or wherever it is. One of those is chasing lighthouses all over America and North America and the rest of the world as well. It's a great bit of fun for several hours any given day, in this case, between August 6th and 7th, for the International Lighthouse Lightship Weekend Contest. In Arizona, Window Rock Special Event Station, N7C, November 7, Charlie, commemorating the Navajo Code Talkers of World War II, August 12 through 14. They're operating on 14.265 and 7.265 megahertz. If you get on the air with them, and you want a QSL card, that's the famous amateur radio postal cards that are sent back and forth throughout the world by amateurs who make contact with one another wherever they are to confirm that they really did talk on that date, that exact time, and that frequency. You can QSL for information via N7HG and N7C. Huntington, West Virginia, Tri-State Amateur Radio Association Hamfest and Computer Show, August 13. Time is 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. The Veterans Memorial Fieldhouse, 2595 5th Avenue, Huntington, West Virginia. It is an ARRL-sponsored exam, Hamfest, so if you're aspiring to become licensed and have already studied the basic material to get either a technician, a general, or go all the way up to extra class, you can do that at the Huntington, West Virginia Tri-State Amateur Radio Association, Hamfest. Alliance, Ohio, Special Event Station, W8LKY, Whiskey 8, Lima, Kilo, Yankee. Alliance Amateur Radio Club is celebrating Alliance Carnation Days, Alliance, Ohio. That's August the 20th, from 1400 Zulu to 2100 Zulu on 7.045 plus or minus, and 14.045, 14.200, and 21.250. For certification, QSL cards again, you can send it to AARC-W8LKY, P.O. Box 3344, Alliance, Ohio, OH, Zipper 44601. Montezuma Pass, Arizona, Special Event Station W7SVD, Whiskey 7, Sierra, Victor, Delta. Operating August 27 from Montezuma Pass, high in the Huchacha Mountains of southeastern Arizona at the Coronado National Memorial, commemorating the establishment of the National Park Service in the United States in 1916. State of Hawaii, the 2011 Hawaii QSO Party. 0400 UTC, August 27 to 0200 UCC, August 28. Various frequencies. If you're involved in it, you'll know where to look for them. They're going to have phone, which is voice, CW, which is code, RTTY, radio teletype, and the new phenomenon in digital communicating, PSK31. For those listeners who pay special attention to these hamfests and special events announcements, the online edition of World Radio for August also shows some in September and others in October. They're listed on page 56 of the August 2011 World Radio Online magazine. If you need help with that and someone has capabilities of the computer setups, you can work with them to bring it up from their website, worldradioonline.com. Our next piece here is titled, Let's Talk to the Public About Ham Radio. It's a promotion and recruitment article by Devere D. Logan, call W1HEO. Radio hams love to talk, and they love to talk about amateur radio. So it seems reasonable for us to seek opportunities to talk to people about our amazing hobby and public service. We certainly have a great topic, but for some, the thought of giving a speech may create a panic attack. Not to worry. After all, we know the subject well. To calm our nerves, we just need a few tips on preparing and delivering a talk. So let's go over some of the basics, and soon we'll be ready to talk to the public about amateur radio. Solid preparation is the best confidence builder. It all starts with planning. Establishing the objective of a talk needs to be the first step in the planning phase. It could be defining amateur radio and its many interesting aspects while emphasizing the fun and public service benefits. We should know our audience and how best to communicate with it. Since describing the remarkable wide world of ham radio in detail could take hours, your talk needs to stick to basics. Assuming that your audience probably knows little or nothing about hams, think about presenting the big picture while avoiding excess details. Think like a reporter. Cover the who, what, where, when, why, and how. Oh, yeah. I remember those. That are commonly found in most news stories. One definition of ham radio that we've used goes like this. Amateur radio is a worldwide network of people united by the common interests in wireless communications. There are some 700,000 licensed radio hams in the United States and nearly 3 million people around the world who enjoy this hobby and public service. It's a lot of fun, but also has a serious side by providing communication in emergencies. Phew, that's all true. But now, let's watch the clock. Try to keep your presentation to 20 minutes, not 20 seconds. Why? Because Ronald Reagan said so. Former presidential speechwriter Peggy Noonan says in her book, titled Simply Speaking, that Reagan knew that 20 minutes is more than enough time to say the most important thing in the world.
The Gettysburg Address went only 3 minutes or so,
she said.
The more important the message, the less time required to say it.
A 20-minute speech is about 10 typed pages long, double space, which is why your speech should be written, not ad-libbed. You probably don't want to write it, but it's good to have text handy as a reference should you need it. Lacking a written talk can result in a wandering presentation that drifts off the subject and adds wasted minutes. It can also bore an audience. Amateur radio is a really interesting hobby, so giving dramatic examples of its fun aspects might convince your listeners to become licensed hams themselves. Hams enjoy some pretty exciting activities, such as talking to people worldwide with a home radio station, communicating by satellite, contacting the International Space Station, bouncing signals off the moon, providing emergency communication, and so on. Few hobbies offer this fantastic variety of options, so it's easy to generate enthusiasm as you describe them. Most of us aren't natural comics, but we do benefit from keeping our talks light with a touch of humor. No need to be a stand-up comedian, but try to avoid making your speech too serious. After all, there are lots of really funny things to do with ham radio. Smile a lot. Be enthusiastic. Communicate your great love for ham radio, and you'll be on the way to recruiting new licensees. Add visual interest to your presentation by including a radio demonstration with a handheld radio or even a portable station. Using slides in a PowerPoint format can help visualize various activities, but try to keep the number of images within reason. Lengthy slideshows can be deadly. Don't want to write a speech? Then how about showing a video that introduces the public to amateur radio? There is a 15-minute DVD called Amateur Radio Wireless Window to the World, produced by the nonprofit Ham Radio Promotion Project, that's HRPP. It does a good job of introducing people to our hobby in an entertaining way. And of course, there's the consideration that you have to find an audience or have an audience find you. There are numerous community groups that regularly invite guest speakers, and many would love to have a ham radio presentation. Civic clubs, youth groups, scout groups, school clubs, senior centers, and many more include speakers as their main programs. We Radio Ham should advertise the fact that we can provide guest speakers. Program chairman would be delighted to find us, since we can provide them with one more program topic. A simple brochure can be developed that lists the topics, titles, and background of speakers that can be circulated to various organizations in the community. A news release describing the speech also can be provided to the sponsoring organization for use in their newsletters or to distribute to local media. Press coverage will help spread the word among others who may be interested in booking the same speaker for their event. Now, folks, as I conclude the reading of this piece, there's an example of what can be done. The Midland, Michigan Amateur Radio Club is providing volunteers to help students at the local middle school build crystal radios during an after-hour activity, or after-school activity. Another project is building a Morse code practice set. The school ham station called WX8JE AARR participated in this year's ARRL School Club Roundup, according to Pat Mullett, KC8RTW, the club's public information officer. Don't toss your old radio magazines either. Recycle them. Sam Zwartney, K4SBZ, suggests leaving copies in a doctor's or dentist's office, car service centers, or clinics. He attaches club information flyers to the inside covers. In conclusion, now it's your turn. What's your club doing to promote ham radio? Drop us a line and let us know. Add a photo, too. The author gives his address and email. It's DeVereLogan@gmail.com. One word, Devere Logan, DeVereLogan, @gmail.com. The author offers certain other information relative to ham radio in schools. Good things happen when ham radio clubs work with schools to enrich learning through practical lab work, kit building, licensing classes, demonstrations, and helping students to get on the air. For 4 years, the K4AMG, Memorial Amateur Radio Club of Chesapeake, Virginia, has provided mentoring to students in the broadcast radio class at the city's Center for Science and Technology. Richard Siff, spelled S-I-F-F, called W4BUE club president, explains that the club provides the school and students with access to the members' expertise and skills in electronics and wireless communications. The club also donates electronic equipment for classroom and home use. The club has documented some of its activities on video. Teachers, students, parents, and ham radio volunteers appear in various scenes, including participating in the ARRL School Club Roundup, building an FM receiver kit, learning soldering skills, and more. Several students show their enthusiasm when explaining why they enjoy ham radio with its international reach. Parents also show their pride in their students' achievement by becoming licensed. W4BUE says that the radio club spent about 400 volunteer hours at the school on projects and mentoring and was able to raise almost $3,500 for amateur radio equipment given to the students. Now, with respect to hams and emergency, recent disasters around the world have involved hundreds of radio amateurs in emergency communication efforts. Floods, earthquakes, fires, and tornadoes have presented hams with challenging situations in which their communication skills have been on display. This volunteer aspect is one of the most important values of our radio service and is often documented in news reports as a normal part of press coverage worldwide. An example occurred during an earthquake in Chile. As described in the newspaper El Mercurio, in the most critical hours when the emergency communications failed, the extensive net of ham radio operators from Putre to Puerto Natale was functioning. Through radio waves, they were able to contact areas where either regular phones or cellular phones were dead. The article also quoted the president of the Chilean Ham Radio Club, who emphasized that hams have a great sense of social responsibility, offering their services to the community at once. Gustavo Corvera, a Chilean amateur, is described in the story as having driven to the earthquake site with another operator, staying there 5 days, connecting isolated areas by radio, and mainly finding missing persons for their desperate families. This example underscores the value of performing vital emergency communication services that speak volumes about the value of the amateur radio service. Such reporting, not advertising, provides a powerful level of public recognition and support. As always, actions speak louder than words. These articles provided by Devere T. Logan, called W1HEO, is an accredited member of the Public Relations Society of America and a member of its College of Fellows. If you'd like to comment to Devere, known as D, D-E-E, Logan, you can send email to his full name, DeVereLogan@gmail.com. Folks, there are a lot of contests in the Contest Corner this month of August as well. The ARRLUHF Contest, August the 6th and 7th. 1010 International Summer, August 6th and 7th. North American QSO Party, August 6th and 7th. Boy, if you're on the radio that couple of days, you can have a heck of a good time. And the North American QSO Party, again, is on August 20th and 21st. This is on 80 through 10 meters single sideband. What say we finish up with a little adventure story? Adventures in Colorado Rockies. Raspberries, anyone? The author is Shell, S-H-E-L. Radin, R-A-D-I-N. Shell's call is KF0UR. Mike's Wild Judy and I were invited by our friends Rob and Jody to go on a hiking trip up to the top of Raspberry Mountain, just outside of Divide, Colorado, where they live. Always enjoying the Colorado countryside, we gratefully accepted. It's one of the pleasures of life and living in Colorado. One of the other pleasures is owning an L-Craft KX1 trail-friendly rig. I've had it for a little while, purchased at the Dayton Hamvention a few years ago. Mine is set for 20, 30, and 40 meters, although the new 30-meter module also provides 80 meters. It's a 4-watt CW rig with a built-in gear, digital display, antenna tuner plus. It's a 10-ounce joy to operate. The other components I use are a 12-volt, 2-amp-hour gel cell, a cellular panel, and a charge controller that keeps the battery topped off so I maintain 4 watts. I use a Palm Mini paddle as well. Rob, who was not a radio amateur, mentioned his residence is at 9,400 feet elevation. The top of Raspberry Mountain is 10,600 feet. My mind immediately thought of operating portable HF with my KX1 from the top. I always wanted to do that. I've used the KX1 on local trails, but had not taken it to the top of any mountain yet. So we decided to go on a Sunday afternoon, packed the rig in my backpack, and headed for Divide. If you Google Raspberry Mountain, you'll find that a trail that exists off of Route 67 going toward Cripple Creek. However, little did I know until we got to Rob and Jody's place that the trail is almost accessible from their property. Very cool. We left their back door, headed through their woods, and their guidance met up with the trail in a short time. The trail to the top is 3-mile circuitous one, but not very hard. It's a good hike that gradually takes you up 1,200 feet. Along the way, you get some great glimpses of fabulous views through the trees. After an hour and a half, we reach the top. At the summit, you climb up a few steps on some very climbable boulders, and wow, what a view! You have 360 degrees of unobstructed views, including the west side of Pikes Peak about 10 miles away, the town of Divide way down there to the north, and other places I don't know the names of yet. We stood in awe for a while, simply enjoying the view. When I'd had enough awe, I started to set up my rig and see who I could contact. By now, it was late afternoon, and we wouldn't be spending all that much time at the top. Assuming I wouldn't have any trees to host an end-fed Zep, I opted to bring and use my portable homebrew vertical that just sticks in the ground. It's 1 foot long collapsed and is 12 feet high, center-loaded with ground radials when set up. It has always worked great. After just a few minutes, I was on 20 meters. After listening up and down a quiet band for a while and then calling CQ near 14.060, the QRP, or the low power calling frequency, I decided to move to 40 meters. 20 meters just wasn't cooperating and my 4 watts needed some help. On 40 meters, I found activity much better. Almost immediately, I had a QSO with a fellow in Texas who heard me answer his CQ. Just me. My 4 watts and killer views. It doesn't get much better than that. Now, I probably should mention that I view QRP hiking somewhat like fishing on a lake, meaning just being there is often enough, regardless of anything fish or QSOs. But catching a fish or QSO makes it that much better. I brought along an extra set of earbuds and an audio splitter so Rob and Jody, neither of whom are hams, could listen to the QSO. They didn't know CW, that's Morse code, but I translated it out loud for them, letter by letter, as I wrote it down. They thought it was cool. What could I say? CW is cool. After that cue, so we decided to start our hike down, so we would get back to Rob and Jody's before dark. I was very satisfied with my one QSO, and it's not the number of QSOs, but the sheer joy of the whole experience. The hike down was as beautiful as it was going up, plus I had the new memories of being at the top and operating. It's hard to describe. And at the time, this was all at the sunspot minimum. I can just imagine what it's like as the new solar cycle is ramping up. Can't wait to go back. So there's a little light-hearted finish to our recording for the month of August 2011 in World Radio Magazine Online. It was The Adventure in the Colorado Rockies, Raspberries Anyone by Shel Rayton, KF0UR. Folks, I've been reading to you from the World Radio Magazine, the online version in digest format, here on the Courage Hand Ham System. World Radio is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording, produced by the Courage Hand Ham System, is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached by telephone 63-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. And a reminder, the word Handy Ham is one word, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, at courage, courage.org. And if you have internet capabilities, or have someone perhaps in your family that has an internet connection, you should coax them into letting you look at the Courage Handy Ham website, which is www.handyham.org. As websites go, it's probably one of the finest directed, updated, and put together of any website there is on the internet. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My QTH, or geographic location, is Dartmouth, Massachusetts. We're right down here at the southern coast of Massachusetts, right against Buzzards Bay. And if you come down Interstate 95 looking for Cape Cod, as you go by Exit 12, wave at me. You'll probably believe this, but if you don't, take my word for it, it's 111 degrees outside here in the New Bedford, Massachusetts area in Dartmouth, Massachusetts. 73s. Thanks a lot for listening along with me again this month on the Courage Handy Ham System. Bob Zeta.